Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Sunita Naidu, good morning to you once again. How are you doing?
I'm well, Howard. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. So now we have definitely ramped up the election campaigning. We're seeing the three parties really out on the road. I was saying to listeners earlier that no matter, I mean, people like to bash the DA, but they've been at this for a while already, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, the DA has been ramping up its efforts around the election campaign in terms of its electoral strategy, its election posters and its campaign and so forth. But of course, the DA was always taking a position that it was prepared and that it had the wherewithal to move forward. They never assumed that the election would be postponed for next year, given the IEC application to the Constitutional Court requesting that because they felt they couldn't hold the election this year due to issues around free and fair. But at the same time, I think that the DA doesn't suffer from the same anomalies like the ruling party suffers from in terms of its own internal structural issues, questions around its capacity, capability and finances, resources, and so forth. So I think at the end of the day, the DA just continued and it was business as usual. If indeed the election was postponed to February next year, then the DA would just, continue its strategy. And it would have appealed it. If it could appeal it, it could have appealed it, and so forth. So I think at the end of the day, it's not necessarily that the DA was essentially, a party that was waiting for something to happen. I think it has always been on the ball when it came to the strategy. I mean, in the Western Cape, where I'm based in the southern suburbs, it's quite interesting to see not a single ANC poster. But I've seen the DA put up its billboards, its posters, the different types of posters with messaging. The ward candidates are out, the PR candidates are out with their posters, and even other parties like, I think it's the Cape Muslim Congress or the Muslim Cape Congress. Mm-hmm. They're quite visible. So is the Freedom Front Plus and so forth. The problem I think it is here is that how much of the preparedness working under the assumption that this election was not going to be shifted has impacted on the ANC.
It is interesting that the ANC, of course, always talking about the future. They will include more women and they will do this. They should be able to, of all parties, to be able to look back and say, this is what we have done. How do they get away from that? How do they stop people and stop their competitors in the field from saying, you've been in power since 1994, look what you haven't done and look what you've achieved. It's dismal.
Well, I think when you listen to the president's launch of the election manifesto, and even in the DA as well, there's a very interesting section in all manifestos where, especially with the ANC, especially with the DA, around the city of Cape Town, it's the provincial governing party in the Western Cape. It runs about 30 municipalities, whether through coalitions, five of which they cite as the clean audit municipalities of governance. I think it comes back to the question, particularly in the case of the ruling party, is how much of your messaging is really hyperbole? We did this, we provided this, but you talk in such broad terms that you need to buckle it down to a quantitative assessment that is also defined by a qualitative output. Now, you can cite numbers, and I think that's what the ANC has done, especially in the election manifesto launch, where the president spoke about the housing, spoke about how many areas they fixed, spoke about education and so forth. But the problem with that kind of approach is that you leave yourself vulnerable to the scandals, to the issues that have emerged around your governance and the architecture of your governance. So if you try to balance out the quantitative numbers around service delivery, housing, water sanitation, employment, etc. And by the way, but the problem here is that are you looking at national issues to define your local government footprint? And that's something that has always perplexed and baffled myself and others.
That's so interesting.
It's fascinating
that. I mean, I hadn't drawn
because
that distinction.
You're conflating national with local.
Yeah.
Local is very specific. Yes, the national issues around housing, around water sanitation, proper and dignified service delivery is all entrenched in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights. It's in your socio-economic rights. But those are things that are past the course at the national level. At the local government level, it's much more than just housing and whatever. Yes, those are key issues. But it's also about the kind of responsiveness you have by your councillors. The fact that, you know, yes, corruption is quite rife at the bureaucratic level of the local government. I mean, if you're looking at how many municipalities have not got clean audits, around over 250 municipalities in this country, and I think only about 30 got clean audits or something to that effect. So I think the problem is that the conflation of what is national to what is local, people at the local level are not just worried about, you know, about the housing. Yes, housing is key. Water and sanitation is key. But it's about the fact that you need to rehabilitate communities. You need to reconstruct communities. You need to provide the kind of renewal of communities. In certain communities, you find people are taking the initiative on their own, and they're basically filling in potholes. They're basically doing their roads. So I think it's much deeper than that. And I think that's where the ANC can't bring it back, because if you're going to use, or any other political party is going to use the national as a way to define the local, then you open yourself up to the criticism, because at the national, you haven't performed well, if not performed at all. And at the local government level, that's just a manifestation of what's happening at the national. So it just percolates and completely manifests itself at the local government level. And so you haven't really achieved the kinds of optics you want to achieve in your election campaigning.
So what are the questions that we should be asking the political parties in terms of a local government election?
Well, I think you should actually put, is that the question? I think the candidates should actually or political parties rather, should be conducting or undertaking townhouse debates. Put your candidates in a townhouse debate a town hall debate assembly. And what you need to do there is you need to have your candidates there. And particularly those candidates where we've seen have just basically stuck to the position. And of course, we can see how bad it is when it comes to people who have been bumped off lists and dissatisfaction with who's on the list and who's the ward councillor and who's not the ward councillor and so forth. That's the first thing. And let the community grill them. Let the community say to you, "You, we haven't seen you for the last 5 years. You are basically not from this community." And that should be the kind of vetting process that needs to happen. We shouldn't be asking political parties, "What are you going to do for our community?" Because they haven't done it for most communities. It's all a big circus. It's all a song and dance at the end of the day. They come into town rolling in the big truck and act as if that they suddenly all very, very worried about the fact that people have not had services for I don't know how many years, or the home that they are living in is completely shoddy, or that the fact that the sewage is leaking into people's backyards, question of ownership of land or accessible to affordable housing. You know, the problem is that we shouldn't be asking them, "Oh, yes, this is what you haven't done." We should actually ask them, "How are you going to do things differently, given that your track record is so poor?" And this person that you say is a candidate and you've endorsed as your candidate for Ward X doesn't actually live in Ward X, lives in Ward B. Secondly, that person is AWOL for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So before you start nominating candidates, put those guys and those candidates that have been nominated and got the vote at the community level into a town hall assembly debate evaluation debate, and say to them, "Now this is your problem," and get them out. But the challenge we have is that we assume that people do not have leadership qualities to be able to govern their community. Because we've been sold the model which is incredibly contradictory, around the idea that if you allow people to govern themselves, it becomes mob rule. Because we're only looking at the model in a hierarchical way. It has to be national, provincial, and local. Let me ask you a question, Howard. Why do we need provincial? Why do we need duplication of a bureaucracy at three levels?
Yeah, it just costs an absolute fortune, and unfortunately, you only land up seeing people at the time of elections anyway. Certainly at the local level.
I completely agree with you. I mean, do you know who your ward councillor is?
I mean, the truth is, I do because I'm engaged in it. But I would imagine that most people.
But I never knew who this person was.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, I saw a name on the IEC.
Right.
And when I registered, I saw the person and said, "This is the person who's your ward councillor." But she's never come to the community and said, "Let me have a community introduction." I'm meeting.
And is that a person? Is that a person that you feel you can turn to if you haven't had power for 36 hours and you're desperate? In fact, I'm just going to put this out to our listeners. Do you know? Well, ahead of this election, did you know who your ward councillor is, and did you feel that in any way you could make contact with them if you had a concern about something in the district? I'd love to hear from you, 34519 or 061-895-1019. Sorry, Sunisha, what were you saying?
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, you and I will do it because we will say, hey, this person earns a salary for my taxes, and therefore they have to be held accountable. But you're putting numbers in there, you're putting cell numbers, mobile numbers. How many people have airtime to phone this woman this person? What if the person says, "I'll phone you back"? You know, the problem with this kind of model that you've got to phone the person when they are saying when you have a problem. Yes, I understand it. You know, you work it like a business: customer care, customer satisfaction. You phone the customer line. But I think it's not about the model; is completely incorrect. That person must come to me and ask me every three to 6 months, "Am I happy?"
Mm.
They must have a kind of town hall discussion every single twice a year. And people then, if they can make it, go there and say, "I don't really think you're doing a good job. I think you're only looking at one particular area." I think the problem with this is that, you have a ward councillor. Phone your ward councillor and they work. No, the ward councillor works for me.
100%.
But they must come to me. Because this idea that only when something is wrong, I phone customer care is being the biggest circus and the biggest magical show on earth and the biggest farce on earth, and that is the liberal capitalist model.